Hello there, Star Wars fam, and welcome to another episode of Quarantined with Jawas.
Wait a second, you said changing the name?
Of course I did, Jar Jar. I'm just joking. Welcome to Jawa Jabber, playing exclusively on Utini Radio. I'm your host, Dennis the Phantom Menace, and I'm joined by my best friend and co-host, David Wren.
Former best friend and co-host. On today's episode, we'll be discussing our thoughts and opinions on the two latest episodes of The Clone Wars, give you a brief real-world check-in on our current non-happenings around the world, and of course, whatever tangents come along the way.
Yes, because tangents are our specialty like sand is for Tatooine. So sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and get ready to experience the power of this fully armed and operational podcast.
This is the way.
Yes. You're my guest. I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
Commence primary ignition.
Oh, brilliant. Let's get going.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first.
All right, hello everybody. Welcome to Jawa Jabber episode number 8, where we're going to be talking about episode number 7 and 8 in The Clone Wars. Those are called Dangerous Debt and Together Again. We're going to combine them again here like we did our last one, just because we kind of want to get caught up on a lot of our episodes and we want to stay current with what's going on, as well as just kind of make it easier for everybody to digest and understand what each episode is, but maybe a little faster.
Rafa, Trace, my favorites.
Woo! Yes, you love these two characters, don't you?
I do. I mean, they're not bad. I like Trace more than Rafa.
You know, quite honestly, I just think this is the genius of Dave Filoni. I think he set it up that way. I don't think that he wanted the audience to like Rafa at the beginning, as she's standoffish. She's abrasive, you know? And you think of yourself like, I probably wouldn't want to be friends with this person. Wouldn't want to know them.
No.
But I think that was on purpose, because it does kind of, throughout the episodes of this arc, it gradually kind of shows her past and shows more of who she is today and why she is that way. But actually, let's jump right in there. What's the fortune cookie message for this episode?
The Jedi killed my parents.
No, that's not the fortune cookie.
And didn't offer me any stimulus check. The fortune cookie is, who you were does not have to define who you are.
So
very Yoda.
It is very Yoda.
Mm-hmm. That one definitely has shades of Yoda.
For me personally, I think this, I mean, it's kind of on the nose, you know, but for me, I think it relates to both Rafa and Ahsoka in different ways.
Okay.
Once we get into it a little more, Rafa is this person that she is at this point in her life with her sister Trace, but she's continuing to be that way because they feel like they have to kind of just look out for each other so they can just try and eke out a living and survive. So they're doing what they have to, not necessarily what they want to. And so I feel like throughout Rafa's character arc, I think we start to see how she has things that have happened in the past, which you kind of alluded to jokingly there about how she is who she is today because of what has happened. But that doesn't mean that what's happened needs to be who she is. In another way to put it, she doesn't need to be a victim and define that as who she is. Yes, things happen to us in our lives. I think it's very relatable to a lot of people in general in life, where it's like some things can happen to you, but that doesn't mean just because it's a, you know, an asterisk or a blip on your, you know, your life's radar, it doesn't mean that has to be who you are for the rest of your life.
Right. You're absolutely right.
And for Ahsoka, I think it's kind of poignant in that she's struggling with her identity herself during this period in her life and after leaving the Jedi Order, and like, who is she? Does she still see herself as a Jedi? Because clearly she still acts like one in many ways. So I think it's relatable to maybe even Trace too. It's kind of relatable to all three of the characters in this arc, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, Trace is young, so she still doesn't have a lot to be like, oh, I regret a lot of this in my past, because she doesn't, I mean, may not regret, but she doesn't have like a whole lot of life experience to be like, oh, I'm not that person anymore, you know?
No, that's true. Yeah, you're right.
What did you feel about this? Anything like kind of strike you about the fortune cookie that you related to?
I mean, I was leaning more into it from Ahsoka's point of view, how like she's a Jedi, but that doesn't necessarily define who she is. Like, she's more than just a Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Especially through this arc, she's starting to figure out that, you know, the Jedi are not necessarily favorably looked upon mm-hmm. by the rest of the galaxy. And, you know, like some people like Rafe and Trasa, like Trace and Rafa. Oh my God. We need to record earlier in the day, apparently. But yeah, like, because, you know, she gets the backstory from Rafa and Trace about the parents and how the Jedi. Now, what Jedi was she referencing? Is it Luminara?
Okay, well, it's probably Luminara, but.
Right. I mean, so, I figured with the green skin and, you know, like they mentioned the green skin and the dark robe, you know, like let's say it's Luminara, went to them and, you know, was like, oh, I'm sorry, may the force be with you. And, you know, like that's, you know, when your parents are dead, you don't want to hear that.
Yeah. Let me back up a little, if you don't mind, because I want to make sure to kind of set this up, because it's kind of, we kind of just jumped right into it.
I'm good on tangents.
Yeah, that is your specialty.
Setup's not my thing.
Okay, so let me set that up a little bit for our listeners.
You're the Ryan Johnson, I'm the J.J. Abrams.
Okay. So, more towards the beginning of this episode, I wanted to mention that it doesn't literally move the characters forward. They begin and end the episode in the same physical place, which is the Pike prison cell on Obadiah. But in my opinion, it fleshes out the characters and defines the dynamic between them, between Trace and Rafa and Ahsoka. And then it sets the stage for the season's final arc, which is the Siege of Mandalore. But I personally like that because it's kind of, it's reminding me, there's like a pattern here. When we had the Bad Batch, we had the first couple episodes were a little slower and it kind of took a while for it to start, you know, finding its feet. And then we got to the final episode and we're like, oh, that was great because it set everything up for us. And I understand a lot of people kind of want it to be like, you know, come on, let's get there finally. You know, it's taking too long. And I understand that. But I think they're doing the same thing here. We didn't expect this kind of stuff. We expected other things with this final season and we got something a little different. And we were wondering, is this the Ahsoka that I like? Is it something that I can kind of get used to? And so I think when we're moving through this arc of Ahsoka and Trace and Rafa, I like that it's setting the stage for the final episode of this arc, which is Together Again, which we'll talk about later on, where it actually wraps it all up and kind of puts it all together. So it kind of had multiple pieces everywhere and it all came together for me in the last episode of that arc. But so what you were talking about is, you know, Ahsoka struggling with trying to understand how other people view the Jedi, you know, how they see the Jedi when it comes to, are these beacons of light? Are these people that, you know, are just so amazing? Or does the common folk kind of see them as they're not as great as they think they are? And so in this case, we're talking about how they're in this prison cell and eventually Rafa just kind of maybe breaks down a little bit and tells the story. She goes on this bit of a monologue about how she was essentially with Trace and her parents and they were collateral damage when it comes to what happened in, I think it was season 2 or even earlier than that.
This is the part that intrigued me because when I was first watching it, I was like, you know, this does kind of sound familiar. And obviously Zero is Zero the Hutt.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they were describing everything, like she said, the green skinned Jedi with the dark robes, like I immediately thought of Luminara. Like, so I'm like, okay, this has to be, you know, the way the Clone Wars is set up and Dave Filoni, like there just has to be an episode where this happened or whatever. And it turns out there are several episodes. It first happens in episode 22 of the first season, which is called Hostage Crisis. And that's actually where the prison break is with Zero. Okay. And then in season 5, there is actually more episodes about this. It's called Sabotage, The Jedi Who Knew Too Much to Catch a Jedi and the Wrong Jedi. That is what happens in those episodes is like basically the lead up to this.
Got it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Zero. So for those of our listeners who may not know exactly or remember, Zero the Hutt it was Jabba's great uncle, and he had, you know, just like the Hutts are gangsters and all that. And the way that the Jedi handled this entire situation, where there was a crash of a cargo ship and it crashed into the home, apparently, of the Martez sisters and killing their parents, it just left a kind of a big scar on them. Since they were so young at the time. And can we agree, at least for me anyway, I think Zero is probably the most annoying character in Clone Wars. I don't like his character.
Zero's the
purple Hutt that sounds really...
Okay.
It's not my favorite character. I think he's the most annoying, personally.
Yeah, and he was in the movie too, wasn't he?
Yes, I believe so.
The original, the 2008 original movie.
So Ahsoka learns about the Martez sisters' tragic past, and it hits a little too close to home for her, because you can actually see the way that they animated Ahsoka, that she's, you know, the camera's looking at Rafa and she's explaining what happened, and then it looks at Ahsoka and you can see her facial features kind of change, and she's, you know, she's hearing it and she's remembering it at the same time because she was there. And I like this scene particularly because it's showing Ahsoka different things about how even probably one of the hardest things of her life was walking away from the Jedi Order. And so seeing the Jedi, perhaps, you know, like we know why they fell, you know, losing their way. They're not squeaky clean guardians of justice that they once saw themselves as, because she never really took the time, I think, to see that some of the things that the Jedi were doing, while it was under the impression of doing good, there was things that happened to common everyday folk that, you know, left them in shambles, essentially. And,
well, yeah. I mean, it's a war.
Right.
There's going to be, and I mean, it is. It's sad. It's very sad. And of course, people are going to, again, Star Wars always does the whole point of view thing. It's one of the themes that run through all of it. And like, that's one of the things I've liked about the Clone Wars is that, like, that episode with, I know we're going on a tangent here. Surprise, surprise. But like, when like Ahsoka goes to help out the one guy who's like a separatist. Not Ahsoka, Padme. When Padme goes to like help out, you know, to like kind of diplomatically talk to some of the separatists because it was like a friend of hers or whatever. Like it shows both sides. And like, as far as the casualties go, you know, the casualties don't care if you're a separatist or if you're part of the Jedi or whatever. I mean, you know, you're going to die. It's war. So like, war is just terrible and they got to find a better solution.
Yeah, I think it highlights it, especially here for these two sisters. And like you were talking about, Luminara Unduli, I really zoned in and kind of focused on when Rafa was talking about the Jedi, that she was beautiful and she was, you know, dark robes contrasting with her green skin and all that. And you and I, like you mentioned, immediately thought of like Luminara, but then I also thought about Barriss Offee being Luminara's Padawan. And so how that hit Ahsoka even more, because Barriss was her friend until, you know, she went bad, bombed the Jedi Temple, and, you know, was responsible for Ahsoka being wrongly accused, which caused her to leave the Jedi Order. So it's one of those things that, and I think that's what Clone Wars, and especially Dave Filoni, was able to do in connecting, you know, something so long ago, but so close to Ahsoka's heart, that it felt like it was the right moment to show us that as an audience, because it's showing how Ahsoka's character is evolving. She's not just a Jedi, but now she's trying to understand, oh, well, maybe they're not exactly how I thought when I was being trained as one, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, so it just became such a big deal to the Martez sisters because, you know, they lost their home, they lost their parents, they had nothing left. And then, like you mentioned earlier, like what Luminara says to them is that she had to make a choice, right? But don't worry, the Force will be with you. And I really didn't like that. I don't think we were supposed to like that as the audience.
Well, no, and this is getting too close to home for me, but like, it's like the whole, I'm sorry for your loss. Thing when someone dies. I hate those words.
Or like thoughts and prayers kind of thing.
Yeah, like I don't know what, like, and now this is time number two that I'm going through this in my life, and I hate it. It doesn't make it better. And I feel like that's what Luminara saying, you know, oh, but the Force will be with you. It's like, okay, but that doesn't bring my family back.
It doesn't change that what happened.
And yeah, like, so that definitely hit home for me after this week and then 2 years ago. It just doesn't, yeah. But again, that's one of the more realistic things about, yeah, it's just, it's a weird, I didn't like it. No.
As Star Wars fans, you know, we always hear that. May the Force be with you. May the Force be with you. And it's usually in context of something nice. But in this case, it's a very hollow phrase to say to somebody who just lost their family.
Exactly.
And like you just said, for some people, it hits home more than others. But it's definitely something that makes Star Wars in general, but particularly Clone Wars here, so impactful and so meaningful, because it's not just a detached universe where it's like, oh, I just go there to completely escape all my worries. Because sometimes, you know, the writers like Dave and everyone else, they things like that happen in everybody's everyday lives. And so when it intermingles into something that you love, it's even more impactful. It means more.
Oh, absolutely. I lost my father and Luke Skywalker in the span of 24 hours. That was an awesome day. Hmm. But yeah, I you know, it does. It intermingles and it's, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Let's move on a little bit.
Sorry to go dark there for a second. You know, I love the dark side, but you know, sometimes it goes a little.
But it was part of this episode. So I think it was important to mention. But they also mention a red-eyed alien protecting Zero. So initially, I didn't remember who that was.
Cad Bane, right?
Yeah, and it's Cad Bane. And so I like that little connection.
I never liked him.
I liked remembering like who he was. I wasn't a huge fan, but some people like love him, you know?
I was going to say, I remember I saw a couple cosplays at Celebration.
Oh, yeah. Some of them were great.
And like, yeah, like they looked really cool. Like it just, you know, he was never a character that screamed to me, ooh, I want to wear his costume, mm-hmm. you know, like, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, a lot of people, like I remember, and this was back before I watched it, but like season two made a big deal about Cad Bane. You know, he was one of the main characters. And like, I remember all the promo material had Cad Bane and like, you know, they were making like this big deal mm-hmm. about Cad Bane. And then when I finally watched it, I'm like, okay.
I think it's because he kind of looks like a cowboy alien, you know?
Yeah. And like the voice just threw me off. I didn't like the voice either. Him and Zero are probably my two least favorite voices in Star Wars, in all of Star Wars. Grievous, at first, I never really liked the voice because I just thought it was weird that he was like coughing and, you mm-hmm. know, whatever. But like over the years, I've really gotten to like Grievous's voice, and
yeah, it grew on you a little. Yeah,
it grew on me like a chia pet. Yeah,
chia. So I also kind of wanted to mention that we've seen this Pike prison before in previous Clone Wars episodes, specifically one called the Lost Ones. And you know, the Pikes have appeared in numerous episodes before, as well as, you know, in Solo, a Star Wars Story, where they look a little different. But
I was going to say, in Solo, they look a little different.
They look a little different. I think they just made it look more like realistic, more modern of how it might look.
Yeah.
I really did enjoy how they look, though, in Solo with the dripping tubes and everything. It was interesting. But they also mention about how the leader of the Pikes in these episodes is Marg Krim. There's also Fife, which is his major domo. And the only time you would ever know who that is if you read the comic Son of Dathomir. That's where he first shows up.
Oh, okay.
I haven't read the whole thing, but I do remember seeing like his design of the guy who's basically secondhand man to Marg Krim.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one.
I thought the design looked a little familiar.
Yeah, that's where it's from.
And that's probably where, yeah, because I've flipped through it a couple times. I just haven't read it.
So anyway, so this entire episode is kind of based upon the premise of they have to, you know, escape from prison. And in various ways they do. But then eventually at the end, they end up back to it. But so here's my opinion on why I actually, you know, watching it a second time, why I like that. It's because, like I said, it doesn't physically move the characters forward in the arc, but it does on their character or emotional level.
That's true.
Where they start out in the beginning, you have Trace kind of still very standoff, not Trace, sorry, Rafa still standoffish, and they're kind of, you know, blaming, hey, if Ahsoka, if you never, you know, showed up, this never would have happened, or if you didn't do this or that. And then while that happens, through everything they go through in this episode, at the end, you actually hear an apology from Rafa after realizing that, you know, they would probably be in a lot more crap if Ahsoka wasn't there. It was just nice to see her character arc grow, and then she apologizes to Ahsoka, but Ahsoka doesn't revel in that apology or say, you know, in her own head, like, oh, well, of course, like I told you this kind of stuff would happen. She says a very, very motherly response and she says, we live and we learn. And I just felt like that was, it was the right thing to say in the moment. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't something where they were all in the situation together and blaming each other again wasn't going to help at all. You know what I'm saying?
Doesn't help. You're right. And I think it also shows Ahsoka's maturity.
Yeah, absolutely.
It shows how much she has grown and why she's one of the best Star Wars characters now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a few other things I kind of wanted to mention that I really, really did enjoy. And I don't know if you saw this in it or if you recognize it, but one of them, of course, I'm sure you did, was prison cells, that red force field. You know?
Yeah, I thought of episode one.
Yes, it's been used several times in Star Wars, but like you said, particularly in episode one, The Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm. When Obi-Wan couldn't get through to, yeah, mm-hmm. like that's immediately what I thought of.
Yes, I like that a lot. And then Ahsoka, later on in that episode, she uses the Force to open the cell, but that's later when she was thrown in on her own. It kind of, like we're saying, it jumped around everywhere. And so I think it was when Trace and Rafa, when they were being tortured by that torture droid, remember that?
Yeah, that was cool.
I thought it was cool, but I also thought it was really, the walk of the droid was like really creepy and eerie.
Yeah, it gave me, as weird as this is going to sound, it gave me like a Saw vibe, you know, like a horror movie, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like a creepy doll or whatever, like that's going to kill you. Yeah, it was weird. Like, it was very strange, but like in a cool way. I don't know, like I dug it. I thought it was neat.
I think it just looks, it's supposed to give off that horror vibe, you know. Mm-hmm. Horror movie vibe. And
where was that droid in Cloud City? That is the droid that should have been torturing Han.
Well, you actually just, you know, set me up perfectly for it. That's the same droid we see in Jabba's palace in Return of the Jedi.
Mm.
The one that's torturing that poor gonk droid's feet.
Yes. Yeah, no, the one that's going with the fire on the feet or whatever, right? Yeah.
So, but yeah, especially when it's like clanging, it's like hands or metal hands together and it's making sparks. That was really like really creepy. And
yeah, that was awesome.
And sometimes I feel like, you know, when they have these torture scenes in Clone Wars, I feel like it's a little cringy. But this one, I felt like they did a really good job at, like, they did a very similar transition to when, you know, in A New Hope, when Darth Vader is about to use the droid on Leia. And he's like, you know, and now we'll discuss the location of your rebel base. And then the door shuts and it kind of like the scene goes to the next scene. They did that same kind of thing here. Like you kind of mm-hmm. saw them getting tortured a little bit, especially Rafa or Trace. Not Trace, Rafa, and then it kind of just moved on. Like, it kind of left your own imagination to fill in the parts.
Well, and sometimes that can be scarier.
That's, yeah, exactly.
You know, like, I think that's a filmmaking decision, and mm-hmm. I think it's a good one, because sometimes your imagination can be crazier than what any of them can come up with.
And I like how when Trace is brought into that, like, torture room, she, you know, we always think of, like, Rafa as being the one who's like tough and rough and tumble, but then Trace does that fake out where she faints, you know, and mm-hmm. they're like, what do we do with this? And then she starts, you know, beating up some of the pikes, and you know, it doesn't obviously end well, but I thought that was like an interesting thing, especially since she's the younger sister, so she kind of has her own way of fighting back. Rafa was more like trying to kind of talk him out of it, kind of like a Han Solo thing, you know. She tried. But anyway, so I like when there was a slight variation of the Force theme when Ahsoka opened the prison cell door.
Yes.
I like that they threw that in there.
I love when they do callbacks to any other music. I love it. It makes me giddy. I love it.
It was fun because there was two other prisoners that when Trace was trying to get away from one of the pikes, like she was running away. And she ran into one and then she fell down and then they were trying to arrest her again. And then these two prisoners are like, hey, let us out. And so she like kicks that button to open the door for them. There's a there's an Ithorian. One of the species is an Ithorian and the other one's a Weakway. The Weakways are most notably in Clone Wars known as, you know, Hondo Ohnaka and his crew.
Yes. Okay. Yep. All right.
There's also Weakways on the skiff in Return of the Jedi with Luke.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I like the connections there, but there's even more, if you believe it. there's a species called a Snivian, which is like a pig looking snaggletooth, I think is the term for this individual. And it's like the alien prisoner. But we first see that species in the Mos Eisley Cantina in A New Hope. So there's a nice connection there. But this one in particular is wearing blue. And that's an homage to the rare blue version of the 1978 Kenner action figure. How they pepper all this stuff in there that, you know, they're really focusing on the details. And just like, you can tell that those making these episodes are real, like, hardcore fans. Because they know the stuff that I was like, oh my gosh, that's true. But, you know, throughout this whole arc, we've seen background characters that they filled in. Like, we had Greedo, we had an Ithorian, we had Ponda Baba, this Snivian. They're all dressed like the original action figure line, like their colors.
I was just going to say, the other episode had that.
Yeah.
They were dressed in their, like the original action figure thing.
Yeah, and I just like that. That's that little touch of extra something special for people who are really, you know, really paying attention. And I mean, you're really trying to focus on the story, but the stuff in the background a lot of time is what's really fun to look at. Because, you know, in animation, that has to be animated back there too.
Oh, absolutely.
So they're obviously going to throw in something for that keen eye and that keen observer who's watching the background as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I really did enjoy those little Easter eggs in that. Anything else on this episode that you could think of?
No, not that I can think of.
I got a few more because, you know, I always got a few more.
Oh, of course you do.
We would be remiss if we didn't talk about Ahsoka catching the eye of some Mandalorians here. We see more of that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's right.
Yeah, we have... who do we have in this trio of Mandalorians we see?
Bo Peep. Bo Peep and Sabine Wren's mother.
Ursa Wren, yep.
Thank you. I was going to say Ursula, but I knew that wasn't right.
it kind of rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Ursula Wren.
It does, yeah. Ursula Wren, yeah. And then the armorer, unconfirmed.
Well, the unconfirmed, exactly.
For the purposes of Jawa Jabber, we're going to say that it's the armorer from The Mandalorian.
So, Bo Peep, as you affectionately call Bo-Katan. You know, Bo-Katan, I think, personally, I feel like she has this this kind of allure, this appeal for many fans. It's a smaller subsection of fans, but it's almost like the obsession that some people have for Boba Fett and the old trilogy fans.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange to me, but on the other hand, it's really cool because it's like, if this is somebody you can latch onto and be like, oh my gosh, I love this character, you know, I'm all for it. But it's one of those things where I kind of feel the same way, but I can't exactly pinpoint why, you know?
I think she's just mysterious.
And she's just cool, like the armor and the way she acts.
Right, she's badass. And like, even the way, like when she takes her helmet off and she's animated, like she just looks like a really cool, suave character. I don't know, like she just...
And you know, I was thinking about it today and I'm thinking maybe it's because, you know, we know that she's Satine's sister and Satine and Obi-Wan are connected and, you know... There's a bit more of a backstory, you know, if you really know who Bo-Katan is and, you know, you're more than just a casual fan. It's just something about her that really gets people excited, you know, like when we saw her and or we heard her voice, we're like, oh my gosh, it's Bo-Katan, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
And so you said, you know, Ursa Wren being the mother of Sabine Wren from Star Wars Rebels, she later advocates for Bo-Katan to lead the Mandalorian people against the Empire. And actually, I think Katie Sackhoff from Battlestar Galactica voices Bo-Katan. I think that's the name of the actress. I've never watched Battlestar Galactica, but I think I've heard somebody talking about that. And I'm like, oh, I think I've heard her voice before. And that kind of connected it a little. And also the third one being perhaps the armorer from the Mandalorian television show. But Bo-Katan, at this point, is leading the rebellion against Maul's forces because Maul took Mandalore. So what happened when Maul took Mandalore, for a lot of people who may not remember, is Death Watch kind of split into two factions, or at least the Mandalorians did. So you had those that joined Maul, and then Bo-Katan had her own group that she kind of made, and now she's a part of something called the Night Owls, which is why the markings on her helmet kind of look like owl eyes.
Okay.
She's a part of this group now, with which includes Ursa Wren and some other Mandalorians, where they're kind of in this, there's this divide between those two, those that joined Maul and those that didn't. And I think it's a nice setup for the last four episodes that we're going to see, you know, Ahsoka and Rex and the Mandalorians and Maul and all of this kind of coming to a head, where they're going to have to fight for Mandalore and who's going to reign supreme, I guess, and who's going to take over.
Well, we know Maul's not going to win.
Well, no, we know that, but how that happens, that's the exciting part.
Episode 3, we all knew that Anakin was going to turn into Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. We just didn't know how it was going to happen.
Right, and how they would play it out, exactly.
Right.
Throughout this episode, I remember I really liked how Ahsoka caused a distraction to try to let Trace and Rafa, like before they got thrown back in the cell at the end of the episode, tried to cause a distraction by fighting some of the pikes. She descends like a control tower of some sort to open like a gate. And she does this whole like kind of like ninja move kind of thing. And it reminded me, like the distraction reminded me of Obi-Wan shutting down the tractor beam in A New Hope to try and let everyone else leave.
Okay.
I like that little connection there. And even though it didn't turn out exactly how they had hoped towards the end of the episode, I like that they're kind of showing maybe like Ahsoka as Trace and Rafa's kind of protector or their guide kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really love the part where they have a lot of bridge scenes in Star Wars. They have these amazing bridge scenes. Something happens on a bridge, you know?
Yes.
But Ahsoka's Jedi jump, that she jumps over Trace and Rafa when they think she's not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she walks up behind them and they're like, whoa, how did you do that? And she says, I'm more athletic than I look. I just laughed out loud with that. I thought it was great.
That was really good. I liked that. I chuckled.
I personally think that was a not a connection, but a parallel, I guess, with Indiana Jones when they're kind of looking over. Mm-hmm. And
OK,
and he's like, he's right behind them. And he's like, what are you looking at? Kind of thing, you know?
OK, yeah. All right. I can see that.
And I thought it was funny, too, that when they're kind of looking over the edge and Trace is worried, like, oh, my gosh, where did Ahsoka go? Did she fall? Is she dead? And Rafa's like, oh, that's too bad. Like, yeah. You could tell she's not being genuine.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll come back for you. She's like, yeah, she's not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like that. And then, you know, we had that brutal death for one of the pikes getting cut in half by an elevator. You know, just another example of a kid's show, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But very Clone Wars style, you know?
A kid show about war.
I think that the way they did it was reminiscent of prior seasons when we had stuff happen, you know, Ahsoka throwing, you know, cutting off four heads with their lightsabers, and then Maul throwing one and cutting off the heads of the Black Sun Syndicate.
Oh, yeah.
That it was very, very Clone Wars. It reminded me a lot. It gave me a bit of a nostalgic feel of like, oh, yeah, this is Clone Wars. This reminds me of Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So I did enjoy just overall that seeing Ahsoka having to learn and deal with how others see the Jedi beyond what she knew when she was, you know, training or with Anakin. And I was just wondering, you know, before we saw the next episode, are the Mandalorians, are Bo-Katan and Ursa Wren, are they going to maybe help them escape? You know, this is what I thought initially before I saw the episode. Or are they going to reveal?
Kind of thinking that maybe they would help them escape.
What I was worried about is maybe to cause, like, it would cause more tension if they, like, revealed Ahsoka's Jedi past to Trace and Rafa, because at this point, Ahsoka hasn't told them, you know, and they're like, oh, so you haven't told them? Like, you're the Jedi I remember, you know?
Right.
I thought that would cause even more of a level of distrust between them, but, you know, that didn't quite happen exactly the way I thought it might, but I thought that would have been kind of cool. Like, they would feel like Ahsoka was lying to them, you know?
Yeah, no, that would have worked.
But that didn't happen. But we'll talk about that a little later. And so people's opinions on this whole arc, I think, in general, I think I had very similar ones to where it was, you know, it's not going anywhere. It's boring. I wish something else was happening. I think I kind of changed my tune a little bit. And I think Ahsoka's arc and the development of her character was really vital and important when she met somebody. It could have been someone else other than Trace and Rafa. But, you know, they chose Trace and Rafa. And I think that just exposing her to how people live in, like, in 1313 and in the underbelly of Coruscant, helping her see that there's a different aspect of the universe, and that it's not all just let's run around and save the world. There's real people hurting and real people who have lives that are affected, and in this case negatively, by the Jedi. So I like that it helped us understand how she gets from point A, being when she left the Jedi Temple, to eventually point B, when she's Fulcrum and she's no Jedi.
Yeah, no, and I think it is. It's an important arc for Ahsoka's character development. I kind of feel like, especially with these last couple episodes, they could have just done it a little quicker, maybe. Or like maybe.
Yeah, I get that.
Like this episode, for example, they start in the jail cell, they get out, and then they're back in the jail cell. You know what I mean? Like, so you could have just, I don't know, like taken important parts of this episode and put it into like the next episode or the previous episode. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like maybe they could have just not extended this arc as much, maybe.
Yeah, we mentioned how if the episodes were longer, maybe they could have probably shoved in some more and made it into two or three episodes instead of four.
There's a concept, make the episodes longer.
But see, look, we're trying to be positive as much as we can.
I am positive.
But I just feel like I'm glad we got, or at least we're not done yet, obviously. We still have more episodes to come, but I'm glad that we at least got a season 7, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because that was a big letdown. And then when it came back, everyone was excited. And I think this excitement is still there. But most people, I think, really want to see the interaction between Anakin and Ahsoka again. Rex and Ahsoka. The Siege of Mandalore. Order 66. Maul and Ahsoka. Like, all this stuff is coming up. And it's just going to be insane. And I'm honestly more excited for that than I have been for these past episodes. But I do appreciate, you know, the amount of time and effort that people have put into making them for us to kind of show. And I know you do too. I'm not saying you don't at all. I'm just saying that I like that it's actually showing us the bridge from season 6 to where we see episode 3 begin in Revenge of the Sith.
I mean, how much is Anakin and Ahsoka really going to see each other? They're not.
I don't know. That's a good question.
We're going to get right into the Siege of Mandalore, which goes into Revenge of the Sith, which then Anakin goes bye-bye. So, like, you know, I mean, you're really not going to get a lot.
It might honestly just be a couple scenes. It might be one episode. If at all, it might not even be a whole episode. I don't know how they're going to do it. I know that some people are going to be disappointed no matter what. But like with other things that we're not, you know, extremely excited about in the Star Wars franchise, there's things that I always try to go, I like that. I like that. I'm going to hold on to that because I love that. And these other things, like, you know, maybe other people like that, but that's not my cup of tea.
Right.
But I also want to just stress and say that, you know, for those things that maybe I'm not interested in or you're not interested in, there may be some people that really love it. Maybe they are like, Rafa and Trace are their favorite characters because they relate to them on a really deep personal level.
Oh, I'm sure we'll see some Rafa and Trace cosplays at Celebration.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those people, more power to them. You know, that's something that, you know, that's what's so great about Star Wars. You can find your niche. You can find your passion in whatever area, whichever character, you know, calls out to you most, maybe multiple characters. I know that's a common thing. A lot of people like all aspects of it. Some people only like certain aspects. And it's always important to remember that just because I don't like something or somebody else doesn't mean that it's something to kind of denigrate or bash, like the Fandom Menace boys.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, we're not them.
Oh, so we also don't want to forget, one of our good friends, Kyle, sent in a voice message regarding his thoughts on Ahsoka and her arc so far in this season. And we thought he made some really good points, so we're just going to go ahead and play that here for you guys. And thank you to Kyle for your insights and for your thoughts and sharing them with us.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on again to discuss Clone Wars. There's nothing I'd rather do during quarantine than talk about my favorite show with my best buds. Contrary to a lot of the opinions I see on Twitter and other social medias, I really enjoyed this arc and I think it's vital to the end of Clone Wars as we know it. Whether you like it or not, Clone Wars is Ahsoka's story. Yes, Anakin will be one of our primary characters, but this is the Clone Wars through Ahsoka's eyes, and it always has been. We all know the Siege of Mandalore is built up to be the biggest event in the show's history, but it wouldn't bear the same weight if we didn't see where Ahsoka's at beforehand, specifically her mindset and how she feels about the Jedi Order. With that being said, this arc is not without its flaws. I thought Dangerous Dead had less importance than the other 3 episodes in this arc. Ahsoka and the sisters started and ended the episode in the same place, jail. While the chase around Obadiah was entertaining, I feel as if they could have taken the most important elements from this episode and placed them in the other 3 of this arc. We could have easily been reintroduced to Bo-Katan on Coruscant, or even at the beginning of episode 8 together again. However, I understand they needed a filler episode. The outline of this season is completely different than anything we've seen before in Clone Wars. We're so used to 22 episodes a season, with 3 to 4 arcs that have at least 4 episodes in their story. However, we needed a Rex story and an Ahsoka story to lead into the Siege of Mandalore. This also gives context to Rebels and maybe Mandalorian. While I think they really could have squeezed these 2 arcs into 6 episodes, it would make no sense to throw in something random, such as the Boba Fett and Cad Bane arc, for example. I'm sure if Dark Disciple and Son of Dathomir weren't made into comic books or books, we might have gotten those stories, but I'm really happy with the 12 episodes we're getting in this season, even though we haven't even seen Siege of Mandalore yet. This season is a great example of linear storytelling, and I can't wait for these last 4 episodes. Overall, I love this arc and the depth it gave Ahsoka's character. Trace and Rafa were a good balance for her personality, and I think it was a wise decision to include them, rather than Nix Okami, who was in the unfinished reels. Giving a love interest to Ahsoka during the final season would feel so rushed, I'm kind of glad she's a hero that doesn't need romance to have an appealing character arc. It's a refreshing take on a female lead, and I'm really happy with the direction they took her story. Also, who doesn't love the nod to 1313, and the brief cameos by Greedo, Hammerhead, Walrusman, and Blue Snaggletooth in episode 5. Thanks again guys for having me on. I hope you stay safe and healthy, and can't wait to see you at Celebration, whenever that may be.
Thank you so much, Kyle, for that voice message. We really always appreciate when we can hear your opinions and your thoughts on matters like this, because as we've mentioned before, you have a lot more knowledge on the Clone Wars than both of us do combined, and we keep saying it, we're like a broken record player, but we got to get you on the show very soon. I know we've had a Zoom call, I think a couple of Zoom calls maybe, and so we've talked that way, but this would be a lot of fun to actually have you on the show maybe when season 7 is completely done, and we can actually have like a one big discussion of our review overall and our thoughts on season 7. So thank you again, and so we're just going to go ahead and move on. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we get back, we're going to start on part 2 of our episode guide, or our episode discussion regarding Together Again, which is episode number 8 of season 7 of Star Wars The Clone Wars.
Although Ahsoka wasn't directly responsible for what happened to Rafa and Trace's parents, Ahsoka feels somewhat responsible. As a Jedi, Ahsoka might not have been given the opportunity to actually think about some of the ramifications and consequences that were caused by her actions. Having Rafa share such a deep and personal story somewhat solidifies some of Ahsoka's conclusions about the Jedi, that they're not always in the right.
It's a very emotional moment when Trace and Rafa tell Ahsoka about their parents. Ahsoka always thought that as a Jedi, she was doing the right thing and helping people. She never thought that there was collateral damage from these battles and these fights that she was involved in. And I think it really opens up her eyes. She sees that they have every right to be angry at the Jedi from their perspective. Of course, they don't like the Jedi.
When Rafa describes the Jedi and they swoop in chasing Cad Bane and Zero down the portal and they're doing these amazing things, everybody's watching in wonder, and then it goes terribly wrong. The point is that the Jedi, they're not always invested in these average people to understand it's gone terribly wrong. And Ahsoka gets it pretty quickly because she's had that experience with the Jedi herself, where she feels wronged by them. So she's relating to these girls. And when she finds out that like they don't agree with these Jedi starting these wars, they don't see it how it helps them. Well, the first thing you're going to do is not tell these people, well, hey, I'm a Jedi.
Ahsoka is now in this very sticky situation. She has to save their lives. And she chooses to hold back the information about her past and about being a Jedi in order to save their life.
For the big Star Wars of it all, we could get caught up in all of that and having the Force. It's just about relating to what people experience, what kids really experience, and no one wants to be an outsider. You want to be seen. You want to be heard. People have different levels of that, but kids go through a lot to feel accepted. They do crazy things, stupid things, wonderful things at times. And so you're always trying to relate your story back to these experiences so kids watching go, I get it, I understand why she's not showing her ability. But then when she can help, and she does in little ways, because she can't let bad things happen to them.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the second part of our episode here, where we're going to start discussing the show Together Again. I believe the episode is number 8 for season 7. And personally, this one was my favorite. It's the final episode of this arc. And like I said earlier with the Bad Batch, Bad Batch was the favorite episode I had was episode number 4. And this one being episode number 8, I thought they wrapped it up really neatly. And I also like that there was a transition for Ahsoka and that it didn't just end there with Trace and Rafa, but it spearheaded us into what we're going to start seeing this coming week and in the next few episodes that are left.
Yeah, it was definitely a good episode. And like I said, I'm most excited about where it's leading us.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely a good episode. I like the action in it a little more than the previous episodes. And it, like you said, it did a really good job of tying this arc up while leading into what we know is happening next, which is where the excitement comes.
Yeah, I think it wraps up one Ahsoka storyline and then sets up a new one for her where we get to the end game essentially for the series. But I can't believe there are only 4 episodes left. Is that not sad or what?
It's very sad.
4 episodes. We were just talking about how, oh my gosh, Clone Wars is coming in February.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are under quarantine.
4 more weeks.
Yeah.
Is it over already? Oh, man!
So in this episode, I thought this is a very small thing to like, I guess, but I like that they had these little alien beings. So what they were trying to do is we left them last in the cell, in the prison cell, and Ahsoka comes up with a plan, and she essentially tells Rafa and Trace that they need to trust her. And it's still kind of hard, especially for Rafa to trust Ahsoka because she kind of came into their lives out of nowhere. But I do like where the episode leads in that they're brought before Margrim, which is the leader of the Pikes. And he kind of knows what's up, but he lets them go through with their plan. And Ahsoka says, hey, why don't you let Trace and Rafa go get the spice that they didn't bring you? Give them one rotation. Give them basically 24 hours. And if they don't bring it back, then Ahsoka says, I'll tell you where their family is. And we know as the audience that Trace and Rafa don't have a family anymore, but Marg Krim doesn't necessarily. And so he agrees to let Trace and Rafa go get the spice wherever they put it. Apparently, they said they put it off world somewhere. And then Ahsoka stays there. So I saw this as like and Rafa at that point, before they were taken back to their ship and said, okay, go get the spice. You have one day. Rafa says, I won't forget this. But she says it kind of like in 2 different ways, I feel like. She says that I won't forget this because she knows that this is part of the plan. But when she says to Ahsoka, even though she says it in kind of like a mean way, Ahsoka, I think, takes it more of like a thank you. But Marg Krim sees it as kind of like she's upset that, oh, Ahsoka's going to give away some family secrets or, you know, kind of hurt them in some way. So I think there was like a double entendre there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I liked that the sisters were trying to help Ahsoka, you know, because they could have easily, you know, just kind of, especially Rafa, I think more so than Trace. I think they could have easily just kind of been like, oh, well, whatever, let's just get back home and kind of leave Ahsoka.
Yeah, which that kind of made me a little cringy in that, like, okay, if I was Marg Krim, at least, you know, you got a bunch of Pikes there, at least send a couple of them with those two and make sure they do what they're doing, you know?
Right.
Like, that's kind of weird that he let them go, because even like in that scene where he says he knows what they're up to, but he can't do anything about it because he has to respond, or he's under the leadership of Maul.
Yes.
Right.
I believe that's correct.
So in this case, like, he knows he really doesn't have an out and he needs that spice because it's not necessarily for him. He's not the one in top command. Maul is. And I like that whole, I mean, the favorite part of this episode for me was the hologram with Maul.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That scene was great. I loved that scene for obvious reasons. And yeah, I just liked how that tied into where we're going. And, you know, it just shows that there is a through line to this season.
Mm-hmm. And I love that this is after Ahsoka escaped from the prison cell when she used the Force. I kind of said that in the last episode, but because they're kind of blending together, you know, it's like one whole long arc. This is where she uses the Force when she's put back into the cell after they let Trace and Rafa go get the spice. And, you know, Rafa's like, how are you going to get out? Like, how are you going to leave? And she says, it's better if you don't know, because she still hasn't told them she's a Jedi, or at least she was. But I like the fact that when Trace and Rafa leave, Ahsoka, you know, she doesn't know whether they're going to come back for her. So she sacrifices herself. And I think that's very Ahsoka, very much her character. She doesn't know if they'll take off and disappear forever. But we do find out later that Rafa's actually going back. You know, we do see a bit of a change in her character, and that it's like, yeah, she was joking. She wants to one up Ahsoka. But on the other hand, it's like, she knows deep down, especially when they start talking about their mother and how like that Ahsoka reminds them of her mother. That's something that, you know, they feel a little more connected to Ahsoka, and that whole bond of trust between them is continuing to build and then builds up to a T in this episode. But I really do like that the plan all along later, you know, Rafa was like, didn't you catch on, Trace? Like Ahsoka let us leave, but she's still expecting, or not she, but Marg Krim is still expecting the spice, right? So they go to a mining facility that the Pikes control to steal spice to bring back to the Pikes, which is always mm-hmm. funny to me because it's like, go steal from your enemy to steal what they've stolen to give back to them, which I thought was kind of neat.
Kind of like Robin Hood in a way.
Yeah, kind of like that. But it was these aliens, which I talked about earlier, they are called, I think they're called Koltungs. I'm not sure if that's the right pronunciation or spelling, but that's the species that Rafa interacts with. They're like these big-headed little aliens. You know, it's a reference to one of the other pod racers in The Phantom Menace. His name is Ben Quadraneros.
Yeah.
He's the one that the pod racer explodes.
I love him. He waves at the camera. He's like, hi.
Yeah, that's the species that they go and they're apparently like in charge of the mining operation, or they're not in charge. They're like one of the workers.
I thought they looked familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's that species. And what's funny is the one that Rafa interacts with, like the main alien guy, I think they're called Koltungs. The one that she's kind of like, you know, you're going to be in trouble if you don't do this, because this is a shipment that I was sent specially to get. And, you know, she's obviously trying to trick him. That voice actor is voiced by Josh Brenner, which is Niku from Star Wars Resistance, that kind of eccentric character.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the same voice actor. He does it for this little alien species in this episode. So I like that they kind of brought in somebody from another. You know, I say this so much, but they tie in so many things. I just love the incredibly intricately interconnected web of Star Wars.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's, to me, that's what makes this show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like all the callbacks and the attention to detail is just wonderful.
One of my favorite aspects of this one was when Ahsoka is kind of sneaking around. She stole some thermal detonators and she's sneaking around. I also felt that that was, you know, very Clone Wars-like. I liked that she was doing that. She wasn't always doing things that were Jedi-related. She was very much doing what she did back in earlier seasons. And I like that when she first heard the conversation between Marg Krim and his majordomo and I think a couple other Pikes, and there's that hologram we see of Maul, when she first heard his voice, her facial expression, that was my expression when I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had a giant smile in my face. And it's funny because this episode came out right after that watch party for Solo A Star Wars Story was going on online with Spencer.
Yes. Yep.
And so it was just like, it was a perfect setup because we saw I just call it Holo Skype with Maul. And then I saw it in this episode and I was like, oh my gosh, here's Maul. We see him finally in this season. I really, really liked that. Like my wife actually walked by and she saw me grinning from ear to ear and she's like, oh, that's so cute. Because it's like, I didn't even realize I was doing it. It's kind of like when you were looking at Vader, you know, cutting down everybody in Rogue One.
Yep, exact. I was just going to say that. Yeah, I'm sure it was just like that.
Yeah, and I just like, I didn't even realize I was doing it until she mentioned it. And I'm like, oh yeah, like, because it's just so friggin' exciting. I love Sam Witwer's voice. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering in this episode, I'm like, okay, in the timeline, you know, as a Star Wars fan, it's like, where are we in the timeline here?
So apparently this episode is a little complicated with the timeline.
Yeah, it is.
Because it kind of takes place like in the middle of like two different things kind of thing, like one of the novels. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's called Dark Disciple, I believe is the name of the novel. And then like the Son of Dathomir comic. And like it kind of is like a combination of that and then where it is in the theme of this season. So
You're right.
I forget where I read it, but they said like, not to think about it too much because it would give you a headache. I forget who said that, but somebody said that.
Yeah, it would kind of go all over the place and like confuse you. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
But we didn't mention, just to continue that tradition, what is the fortune cookie message for this episode?
Oh, yeah, we skipped that, didn't we?
We did. We went right into Maul.
We did. Well, that's because, I mean, it's Maul. I mean,
yeah.
We love Maul.
Yeah.
I met him. He's wonderful.
I know. We've mentioned that.
We have. All right. Fortune Cookie, episode 8, together again. So you can change who you are, but you cannot run from yourself.
Who do you think that refers to?
I'm kind of leaning toward Ahsoka again.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because this is like her arc or anything, but like, you know, she's always going to be a Jedi at heart. So, like, you know, she can say that she's not a Jedi. She can try and change who she is. But at the end of the day, you can't change your heart and you can't change, like, your instincts and you can't change how you feel about a certain thing. So, like, you know, she was going to lay low, and then she ran into Rafa and Trace and started helping them.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, I agree with you in that it's one of those. When I saw that fortune cookie, I thought about how Ahsoka, when she even mentions it, and I think it was the last episode or maybe this one, where she was always taught to help anybody along her way or her path. Yeah. Whenever she encountered somebody that needed help, just to do it because that's the right thing to do. She can't get away from that, nor should she. That's her character. She was, you know, not only grew up to think that way, but she just can't, when she sees people in trouble, even if they're not like friends at the moment, she jumps into action like she did here when she, you know, set up the detonators everywhere. She tried to find out where, you know, where that hollow message was coming from. And she was just trying to get Trace and Rafa, which in this case are her friends, trying to get them out of there, which is what she did by sacrificing herself and kind of dealing with the Pikes the way that she could. And even the Pikes still think she's a Jedi. It's not like it's her place to be like, oh no, let me correct you and let me fill you in this whole history of what happened.
Right.
I really like, I heard Ashley Eckstein talk about how to her, this whole arc was a story of friendship, because in the first episode or the first couple ones, we had Trace helping Ahsoka. She crashed her speeder on that landing platform. And so they had that whole little interaction where she helped her when she didn't have to. And then we had later on Ahsoka help them, you know, help them try to escape. And then, of course, they get thrown back in the prison cell. But then now again, they're helping Ahsoka by bringing back the spice so that they can, you know, get Ahsoka free. So there's, it's kind of like this dynamic friendship that's evolving from the beginning, where it could have gone the completely opposite direction. But that's kind of what brings it all to a T here at the end of this arc, is that building those friendships along the way isn't always as smooth as, you know, you might hope to be. But, you know, towards the end, I feel like they really got to a place where they kind of trusted each other more. The whole trust arc, even back in the Bad Batch, has been flowing through this entire season, where, you know, trust is earned. It's not something that you can just, oh yeah, I trust you and I just met you 10 minutes ago. It's something that takes a bit of time and effort. But I also like that, there was, I think, one singular connection with Qui-Gon. And I made this connection too because I heard somebody talk about it, that Qui-Gon was the master to Obi-Wan, as well as Obi-Wan was the master to Anakin, and Anakin to Ahsoka. So there's an unbroken line there, where I think Qui-Gon had it right when we were talking about the last episode, that, you know, the Jedi aren't exactly perfect, and the Jedi code and the strict standards, you know, if you stay within that confine, sometimes that, you know, it doesn't work out in real life. And so I think Qui-Gon was like the example to where it kind of passed on through Obi-Wan, through Anakin, and to Ahsoka, to where now she's kind of experiencing life outside of, you know, the Jedi Order, and she kind of is still able to learn to love and to show compassion to others, but not have to have that possession part that, you know, leads to the dark side. So I like that there's a bit of a, there's an ebb and flow here from way back to Qui-Gon and translating through all the masters to get to Ahsoka. And I think she kind of has some of his persona, the way that he would have handled things, you know, had he been in her situation.
Yeah, I didn't think of that, but I agree. I like that. I agree with that.
And I agree with Ashley too. I think it's a great story of friendship at the end of the day, and how you have your bumps and your things along the road of, you know, that friendship that may not go according to plan, but you hope that at the end of the day, that it's actually something that you've gone through that journey together and forged a stronger friendship as a result.
Right. Like, you have your quarantines and your pandemics, and then at the end of the day, you end up at a hotel poolside by Anaheim, California for a celebration, and everything's great.
That's the hope, right? That's the hope.
The hope that this rebellion is built upon.
I wanted to make a connection to, because I thought about it the other day, that remember when we were talking about way back when at the beginning of this arc, where Trace doesn't know what she's doing. She's a kid. She's building this spaceship, this, you know, the ship on her own. And then she gets to flying it. They go on this mission and she forgets to take off the air brake. She almost destroys the thing in hyperspace.
Uh-huh.
And you might hate me for this, but I kind of see her as like Anakin as a kid. Like, she has this not an arrogance, but like an overwhelming confidence that, you know, she can do it. She can do this. She wants to go to the stars. She wants to be able to fly and leave the place. Like she was stuck in 1313. Like Anakin was stuck on Tatooine. And and in this case, like Anakin was building a pod racer on his own. You know, the one he had before that was Watto's got destroyed in a race, you know? So like I saw the connections there and I'm like, you know what? Trace is kind of like Anakin when he was little. She's got this spunk, you know, she's got this desire to be greater than what she is and to move on into a life that's just so much more impactful for her as a person. And that's kind of how I saw Anakin. And I thought, you know, Trace annoyed me a bit, but heck, you know, Anakin kind of annoyed me a little bit too. And then they grew out of that, you know, they became who they were meant to be.
Which could be why Ahsoka is drawn toward her.
I agree. Absolutely.
Maybe she sees, not that she really met younger Anakin, you know, like, I mean, she didn't really know him as that little boy on Tatooine, as Padme always says. But like, you know, like maybe she senses that bit of Anakin in her.
Yeah, I think you're right. In the earlier episode, when she talked about, you know, going to Skywalker Academy.
I love that moment.
Yeah, I also just wonder, you know, because I think we talked about how she winced, like hoping Trace wouldn't know who Skywalker is.
Right.
But throughout the galaxy, I feel like that may have been a common name, which I guess she was relieved that she didn't know, because I feel like it's something that, you know, he was known as a war hero. He was known like all these amazing things that he had done. And even in Revenge of the Sith, Padme says, you know, there were rumors that you had died. Like this stuff's spreading like it would in our normal world, that this person's, you know, an amazing war hero and they're helping the Republic defeat the Separatists and all that. And I feel like there's so many things that you can pull from, like from the ending scene of The Last Jedi, you know, the little kids are playing with the toys. Right? Right. And they have these legends. Luke Skywalker did this and that. And then you have Rey at the end of The Rise of Skywalker, where she says Rey Skywalker, and it means something not only to her, but maybe even to that old woman, who knows. And now Ahsoka, you know, she references Skywalker Academy. Like, it seems like it's not just a name. It's a legend. It's a name. It's a term that kind of evokes, or she maybe hopes it doesn't evoke a kind of a, oh my gosh, yeah, that Skywalker guy, so full of himself, arrogant, all that. I just feel like that's kind of a common theme, not just the Skywalker name, obviously we know that is, but I feel like the whole idea of like living in that universe, if you live down in 1313, would you really even know who Skywalker was? You're so detached from the senators and the representatives and all these high-end folks on the upper levels.
We wouldn't, because you're just struggling to survive.
Right. And I like that they highlighted that, where it's like, if you ever did hear about it, you know, even Rey talks about it in, you know, The Force Awakens.
I thought he was a myth.
Yeah, he was a myth. Yeah, it was something that's maybe you don't really know if this person exists, because you're poor. You have right. A meager existence, and you're just trying to live day to day. You're not thinking about these amazing, you know, war heroes and stuff. So I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And in this episode, during that, and I'm jumping all over the place here, but, and I apologize for that, but the hollow call with Maul, I like that there's that moment where like he senses and knows Ahsoka's listening.
And he like looks down, even though, yeah.
Yeah.
I want, in some kind of supplemental material, I want to know how that communication system works. Because, like, you know, so, like, I was talking to my friend Matt before we were recording this podcast, and, like, I kept looking at the screen and not the camera, so, like, it didn't look like I was talking to him, you know what I mean? And, like, so, like, you know, in all of these movies, like, Darth Sidious in episode 1, the big giant Snoke head in episode 8, like, how do these telecommunication things work? Like, I really want to know. Like, that's just the dork in me, but like, I want to know.
Yeah, that's like the super detailed, but I agree with you. I would love to know that. And I'm,
you know what I mean, like because, you know, they're holding the little thingy, whatever it is,
like the communicator thing, yeah,
that is projecting Maul's image. So like, what does Maul see on the other side? Does he see the entire warehouse or whatever it is, you know? Like, I mean,
yeah, I thought there was like a radius and a distance where you could see something.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just, he's obviously very strong in the Force, so he can sense, and she's kind of looking in that direction, but he doesn't necessarily see her. You know, like he knows she's in that.
Like you said, I think it's more of like he sensed something or.
Like he knows she's in that general area. And then she thinks, oh no, he's going to see me. And then she has to hide.
Right.
I really like that. I like the music that swelled when he looked. And he also, he references Crimson Dawn, which we know from Solo, Star Wars Story.
Yes.
And so that made me kind of dig a little bit. And so after the events of all this, after we see Mandalore, apparently Maul returns to Dathomir in that comic book. And after this Shadow Collective, which he put together, which all these crime syndicates with the Pikes and the Black Sun and the Hutts, after that's all dissolved, after the Empire takes over Mandalore, and I guess there's that great purge, I'm hoping to see what happens there, you know? There's that big defining moment in the Mandalorian's history where they keep referring back to it, even in the Mandalorian TV series, you know?
The Purge, yeah.
The Purge, yeah. So after the Shadow Collective is dissolved, he goes back to Dathomir. And there he establishes Crimson Dawn. So when he mentions Crimson Dawn here to Mar Krim, the leader of the Pikes, he says, you know, if you can't handle this, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but if you can handle this, then I'm sure Crimson Dawn would love to take over your operation. So he's already has Crimson Dawn. So when it comes to the timeline, I feel like he's already establishing a new crime syndicate just in case something bad happens in Mandalore.
Like a backup plan.
Like a backup plan, exactly.
He's always six moves ahead.
You know, he probably learned from Palpatine. He's very, you know, obviously very intelligent, but very manipulative. Very, the way that, you know, he speaks even in this episode and in prior ones, that he seems to be holding back more than he knows, you know, just because it's him. It's his plan. I think even in the Clone Wars trailer, he says the words, the plan. I think he's referencing, obviously, maybe Palpatine's, but maybe he's referencing his own as well. Like, there's a plan, and it's all coming to a point here, and we're going to see that. And I just like that in the comic, with him returning to Dathomir, he takes some of those Mandalorians who were loyal to him from Death Watch, and then they, of course, rebrand their armor, and it's, like, red, and it has, like, the horns on it, you know?
Right.
And in this comic, like, from what I've seen, this is what makes me think that maybe one of the Mandalorians that's with Bo-Katan and Ursa is not the Armorer, even though I'd like it to be. Because of this, I think that when we see the Armorer in the Mandalorian, she has like a red armor, like her breastplate is red, and she has the helmet with like spikes and horns on it, right?
That's true.
So maybe she was a part of Maul's Crimson Dawn, and then she's reverted back to the, you know, this is the way, like the beginning of our episodes. She's reverted back to the Mandalorian creed and the culture after all of these events.
And then think about it this way. If we were seeing this before the Mandalorian, would we have thought, like once we finally see the Mandalorian, would we have thought that the Armorer was this?
I think so.
Okay.
I think we would have connected the two, because like if we see some of Maul's Mandalorian, you know, Death Watch group that's loyal to him, and they're wearing armor, you know, to essentially revere Maul because it's like the most powerful force user they know, or, you know, this great leader, and they model their armor after what he looks like, I can see the connection there with the Armorer, you know, later on in the Mandalorian.
Okay.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm reaching there, but I think there might be a connection. And so, yeah, I really like that in this episode when Rafa is fighting the manager, is what they call him. It's not those little alien guys. He's a Trandoshan, so he's like a bigger one, you know. For those of you listening who don't know what Trandoshan is, it's Bosk. He's the species, which is the one of the bounty hunters we see in The Empire Strikes Back, very briefly. No, that was not Bosk. It was just another species of his. And so I thought it was really funny that when Rafa's fighting with him, she kicks him in the chest, and he makes a raptor sound from Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
That was like immediately, that was probably one of the first things I noticed in this episode. You know, it was very early when I watched it, but I'm like, that sounds like the bellowing of a raptor in Jurassic Park. And then of course there's like the hissing sound. So yeah, it makes sense. A Trandoshan is reptile, dinosaur-like. But I thought it was really funny that someone was sitting there in the sound booth going, when he gets kicked in the chest, let's make him sound like a velociraptor. Trace in this episode finally stands up to her sister Rafa. I like that. She finally, you know, was like, enough. This is something that not necessarily I want to do. And then Ahsoka even, I think, juts in at some point where even I feel like Rafa's being a little bit, you know, psychologically manipulative. Like, you know, she can leave at any time. She doesn't have to be like doing this stuff with me. And that's kind of like, I don't know. I feel like that's kind of what abusive relationships are like, where someone says that, you know, and I think that's highlighting it here between those two as sisters, where it's like, you know, you can leave anytime, but because of there being emotional connections tied and everything, like, it's not that easy. Ahsoka says, you know, you think she'd really leave? No, she doesn't want to leave her sister. Like, this is a problem. But like, it's one of those times where I felt like Rafa's still kind of pulling the strings, and like she wants Trace to be around and do things with her and for her, but not necessarily in Trace's best interest.
Yeah, no, I still think that Rafa is acting in her own interest, mm-hmm. not necessarily for real. I mean, they definitely got a little closer during this arc, but I still kind of feel like Rafa is out on her own.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it's that reluctant parent thing, and it happens. Mm-hmm. Like, again, it's that real life bleeding into our fantasy. Like, it does happen when your parents die. You know, the kids, especially the older sibling, has to step it up.
Somebody always becomes the, like, whether by choice or not, sometimes it just happens naturally. Somebody always becomes, like, the leader and the other one the follower.
It's never by choice. Yeah, and if right. they say that by choice, they're lying to you.
Or they're extremely, you know, power hungry.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you could have a Palpatine in there, sure.
Yeah.
You could have Empress Palpatine as your sister.
There's one part in here that I almost completely forgot about. And it's when they come back and they bring the spice and Ahsoka's like, okay, I guess they did come back. And then there's, you know, Marg Krim. He's like, we already know that you're Jedi here, friend. Like, we know you're part of this. Like, you're also Jedis. And they're like, what Jedi, you know? And then they have that moment where Ahsoka's like, I was a Jedi, you know, but I left.
You can do that?
Yeah, exactly. You could do that? Like, they were, like, surprised.
That was good. I liked that.
It was funny, but on the other hand, I also felt like it was supposed to be funny. I get you. I completely agree. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, they're probably wondering, like, if you were a Jedi, you know, you were in the upper echelons of Coruscant, why would you ever want to leave?
That's true.
You know, compared to them and their life, man, Jedi sounds like, or maybe not Jedi, but at least in that kind of wealthy aspect of living in Coruscant, like, that sounds like the dream.
On top side,
exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, hey, I mean, the grass is not always greener.
Right, as we've seen.
No matter what it is. Like, there is a new grocery store that opened a couple months ago in our town, and now we have two grocery stores. And there has been a significant number of people who left the grocery store that I work at and went to this new one. And now that it's a couple months later, they're finding, you know, like, they thought it was going to be great, and, you know, oh yeah, they're going to take better care of us and blah, 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 blah. And like, you know, better wages and better all this stuff. And now it's a couple months later and it's like they're all figuring out, well, no, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah, sometimes it can be, like you said, grass is greener, but not quite.
Not quite. Unless you're going to Celebration.
We talk about the music in these episodes a lot because the music is what makes it. We talk about that all the time. It makes it great.
Kevin Kiner.
We love you.
Yes, we do.
We love Dave Filoni. Thank you, Dave, for everything. If you're listening.
We do. Maybe he is listening.
Who knows? It's possible.
I'll mail him one of our cards and maybe he'll listen.
Maybe. I like that when there's that chasing, right? So they get on the ship and they're trying to get away from the pikes, and you know, Ahsoka gets to the gunner part of the ship, and there's that music, which I thought was a throwback during the chase scene in the asteroid field and the Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
That music was playing, you know, as she's shooting down the ships of the pikes. And Trace pulls an Anakin here, I think.
Yeah.
When she turns the ship around and flies directly at the ship.
That was awesome.
I
did enjoy that part.
I'm like, this reminds me exactly of how Anakin would fly a ship and Obi-Wan would be freaking out.
Yeah, that's totally, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, turn the shields on, get so close that it just knocks the other ship out, and then it crashes and, you know, just gets destroyed. But something that was completely reckless but worked. And in the end, it was like, yeah, it worked, but it was terrifying in the moment, you know?
She really is a lot like Anakin.
Yeah, I think they did that on purpose. And
so you'd think I would like her more than I do.
Well, initially, you know, it's supposed to be a... I think there's always that resistance to change a little bit. Like, I don't know if I like this character. This is new. Like, she annoys me. But I felt that way a little bit about Ahsoka. You did when we first you know, encountered her back way back when.
Exactly.
And look how we love her now.
I know. When is she getting her lightsabers?
I'm thinking the next episode.
I hope so, because we only have 4 left.
Yeah. The next episode's actually called Old Friends Not Forgotten, which would be, I honestly think, and maybe I'm wrong, I hope I'm wrong, but I honestly think the next one is going to be Anakin gives her those lightsabers, they're blue now, and then it's the same one where she meets, or she reunites again with Rex, and she has all the clone troopers.
They have the Ahsoka helmets?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's going to be a very, very heavy, very emotional episode.
I mean, it was emotional in the trailer.
Oh, because the trailers are always emotional. That's the purpose, right?
Right. But like, I'm just saying, like, I mean, we saw it out of context and it was emotional.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Thinking of the Clone Wars panel from Celebration a year ago and like that picture of her holding the lightsabers
mm-hmm.
that I have on my wall that I'm looking at right now. Like, it's like, I just want that to happen.
Oh, that's, I think that's going to happen. During, I think there was like a, well, obviously it was a teaser trailer, but there's the extended trailer, like the longer one they released a while back. Mm-hmm. And I think it's when she gets back to Mandalore with Bo-Katan, and there's that whole showdown where like she, you know, she jumps out of it and then she's dealing with the Mandalorians, which are obviously on Maul's side. And like that whole thing is going to be very action packed. But what I'm actually really excited about is the one where we saw the teaser and it was like, it's Hollow Ahsoka. You know, and you can see her back and Anakin's face, and she says, "Hello, Master. It's been a while."
Yeah,
like she's standing with Bo-Katan right there, so that one's coming up next. I'm excited.
Like maybe they made that just for the teaser.
I hope not.
I hope not either. But I mean, you never know.
I really do want to see
Jyn Erso with the TIE fighter. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's, you got a point, but we'll see.
Oh my God, that was already after the trailer. That was my favorite part of Rogue One. I knew it. Like going into the movie, I just could not wait. And I remember telling Sean and Brendan and Ashley that I know this is going to be at the end of the movie, but I don't care. I'm going to be so excited when she like, you know, kind of faces off with this TIE fighter, and then it never happened.
You know what I kind of wish they did in instances like that? I know it wouldn't mesh with everything being as canon and coherent as possible, but like if you had a alternative scene, you know,
like a deleted scene,
not like a deleted scene, but like if you wanted that scene to look differently, they gave you the option, kind of like when you read books and you can go at a different ending,
like a choose your own adventure kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. But it would still end the same way that Rogue One would, but maybe the scene would be different in like, if you like the way that they did it, fine. But if you wanted it the way that they also filmed it and they completed it, then you can also watch that scene differently.
I don't see how they would accomplish that.
That's what I'm saying. It wouldn't make sense with canon and with making it all like, because you can't have one with Darth Vader and one without Darth Vader. But
look at the Episode 3 video game.
Don't remember it. You'd have to refresh my memory.
Oh my God, dude. It's amazing. Number one, it's one of the best video games ever made. And I'm not just saying that because of the hype train. But like, it was the first video game, at least it was the first video game that I played in the Star Wars world, where you actually felt like you were a Jedi. Like, they actually, the crew that made the video game was on set with Hayden Christensen and Ewan McGregor, like while they were filming and stuff. And like,
oh, that's cool.
They did like, you know how, like when you're going to superimpose a digital character on an actor, like they have you in that like dot suit and all that stuff.
Well, yeah. The mocap suit. Yeah.
Right. Thank you. Mocap. Yeah. I couldn't think of what it's called, but they had that for Hayden Christensen, like, so they could get his like movements and stuff mm-hmm. for the video game. So anyway, fast forward to the end of the video game, and you're playing as Anakin, okay? Mm-hmm. So you get to the famous scene where it's over, Anakin, I have the high ground, right?
Right.
You underestimate my power. Don't try it, okay? Anakin flips over Obi-Wan, mm-hmm. okay? Obi-Wan misses, and then Anakin turns around with a lightsaber and stabs Obi-Wan.
Okay.
Right through the heart. And then Obi-Wan just topples down and falls into the lava. And then you get like a dun 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 dun, and like Anakin's walking away, and then he gets into the shuttle with Palpatine, and then they like that's the end. But like,
so there's like an alternate ending then. Yeah,
like an alternate ending. Yeah, and like it was just so cool because now I forget. You must be able to play. It's been years since I've played it, but when I get my PS5, you can backwards compatible it, and I got one for my brother years ago, so I'm totally playing it, but it's for PlayStation 2. But, like, I guess you play as Obi-Wan in that final battle, and then it was, like, an option you could play as Anakin, so of course I wanted to play as Anakin. And, yeah, like you're fighting Obi-Wan until you, like, defeat him, and then, but, like, then you get that alternate ending. It was, like, creepy. Because I remember, like, I got that ending before the freaking movie came out, and I was like, wait, what?
I'm like, oh, see, that's messed up. You're gonna have to release that game after the movie.
No, they released that game on, I want to say, May 1st or May 3rd.
Well, that would ruin it for me. I think that's a mistake.
Like, Padme wasn't in the game, you know what I mean? Like, so
no, but like the final scene of how Anakin Vader, like, you can't do that.
Yeah, well, they did. They had the novel out too, because I told you back when I read. Like, I read that book before the movie came out.
You gotta get back on the reading train, man.
I am doing pretty good.
So yes, I think I vaguely remember seeing something like that on YouTube, like a clip of that video game ending.
I actually just recently found it again on YouTube. I'll have to send you the link. I know I have it somewhere. Because it is. It's pretty cool. And actually, for like a video game, like the graphics were not that bad in that game either. Like
should remake it with the graphics they have nowadays. That'd be great.
Dude, stop. That would be amazing. There is a list of games that I would love them to redo, which we can talk about right after this break.
You're listening to Jawa Jabber exclusively on Utini Radio.
You and I have a common enemy. Ma.
We watch Ahsoka sacrifice herself in this episode in order to save Trace and Rafa. That is the Ahsoka that we know and love. And that's one thing that I love about Ahsoka.
At the end of the day for Ahsoka, even though she's left the Jedi Order, she cannot, in my opinion, deny that she was raised there and it has made a profound impression on her. She's going to do the right thing. She cannot just look at people that are in peril and walk away from it. There's just no way she could do that. It's not who she is. In the episode arc, even though she's not part of the Jedi Order, she is acting very much like a Jedi.
Crimson Dawn was always going to be a part of the episode. It was in there in the script phase. Dave wanted to establish Maul's grasp across the galaxy. And Bo-Katan was always planned to be a part of this episode. We wanted this arc with the Martez sisters to kind of lead into the Siege of Mandalore arc. So it just felt natural for Bo-Katan to show up just to kind of propel Ahsoka into that story, essentially.
This four-part arc, for me, it's actually a story of friendship. In the very first episode, Trace helps Ahsoka. And then throughout the arc, Ahsoka helps Trace and Rafa. And then at the end, Rafa helps Ahsoka. And it's such a beautiful story of friendship and how we should just help each other. You know, I think it's a beautiful message that we can take into our own lives. And these episodes, they teach that lesson of helping people and of friendship just so beautifully.
For me with Ahsoka, it was always important that as a young person, she's asking questions and she's not just following, that she can make up her own mind and that she can even go against what Anakin thinks. She has to be an individual. And to me, when you look at the Jedi in the prequel era, the one Jedi that has it most right is Qui-Gon. Because Qui-Gon understands that you can still love someone as long as you don't try to possess them, as long as you can let them go. He is selfless. Ahsoka is on a selfless path. And because Qui-Gon taught Obi-Wan, taught Anakin, taught her, that teaching is in her. She gets the benefit of Anakin and Obi-Wan. Both of them teach her throughout the course of her life. And so she has kind of a nicely balanced view of things where a lot of Jedi, I don't think, have that. So Ahsoka's tied to all of that, but she's making her own decisions outside of those character arcs. But I have to look at the whole thing and piece it together and bring it to a conclusion here in these last 12 episodes.
So
So the last couple of things I wanted to kind of mention, those are fun little Easter eggs, is because we got more, you know, Bo-Katan and Ursa Wren and maybe the other Mando. They're flying in a Comart class fighter transport, which is AKA a Mandalorian ship. But it looks like the shape of like the visor of their helmets, a T or an M, depending on how you look at it. Those were originally designed by Death Watch, and Bo-Katan used to be a part of Death Watch. So that's what we saw in the earlier seasons of the Clone Wars. I like that they brought that back.
Okay.
That's the one where at the end of this episode, I enjoyed seeing the whole character development of Trace and Rafa and Ahsoka, but she leaves her speeder bike with Trace and Rafa, you know, and says, you know, if she ever needed or wanted to come back, it's kind of like a nod to, you know, we're friends now and maybe we'll see each other again in the future kind of thing. Maybe in the intervening time between this and Rebels, she comes back to see them and maybe like a supplementary material, who knows?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we'll have to see.
We'll have to see. I definitely like that. I love the design of that Mandalorian ship. It just looks so cool to me. Every time I see it, I'm like, bravo to the designers for this. I really enjoyed seeing that again. Just a little small thing that some people might be like, ah, whatever, but I really liked it. And for the most part, you know, she leaves with Bo-Katan because they used to be enemies. Like when she finally shows up in front of Ahsoka, Ahsoka's like, get behind me to Trace and Rafa, because the last time she saw her, she was fighting her. She was part of Death Watch. They weren't friends. And then here she shows her the, you know, like the hollow of Maul, and she says, we have a common enemy. And so they team up.
That brings people together.
Yeah. And they team up and, you know, they fly away. She basically told me, hey, you got 5 minutes to decide whether you want to come.
I thought that was kind of funny. I'm like, oh, all right. I'm like, they're not messing around.
But I like the way they wrapped it up and how it's really leading right into the next and the last four episodes. I like that it didn't just end like, oh, you know, happy Trace, Rafa and Ahsoka and then Iris and then credits. It was like, hey, no, they're going on another adventure with Ahsoka, but this is the second part of Ahsoka's arc too.
Yeah, totally.
Because it really, I mean, this season, minus the Bad Batch, I think, you know, these last 8 episodes are all about Ahsoka and sprinkled with Anakin and Rex, but it's all about Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a ton of Anakin arc in other parts of the Clone Wars, as well as the actual films. This one, I think Dave really honed in on trying to show us the character development of Ahsoka. So thank you, everybody, for sticking with us and listening through season 7, episode 7 and 8, which is Dangerous Debt and Together Again. This is closing out part of Ahsoka's arc. She's starting a new one, and we're extremely excited for the last 4. I think I can kind of speak on behalf of David and me that this is probably going to be our favorite of season 7.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that it's done really well. It's kind of like when I had, you know, we trust in JJ for The Rise of Skywalker. I hope we can trust in Dave Filoni to do what we hope to see.
Based on what we already know from the behind the scenes, from like Celebration and like that they got Ray Park in the mocap suit and all this, like it just, you know, like just those little tidbits of information that we already know about it, it just adds to the excitement. I can't wait.
I'm super stoked to see how they animated that too. That's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks again for listening. If you want to follow us on Facebook, we are, you know, under our Facebook page, it's Jawa Jabber. If you want to find us on Twitter, it's Jabbering Jawas. And then on Instagram, it's Jawa Jabber Pod. So it's a little different on all of them. But if you type in any alliteration of Jawa or Jabber, I'm sure you'll be able to find us easily. My private Twitter handle is Ben Solo Shadow. And where can they find you, David, if they want to maybe shoot you a comment or let you know what they thought of the episode?
All right. You can find me on Twitter at TheChosenWren83 and on Instagram at DavidWren0914.
All right. Well, that wraps up this show. And thank you so much again for listening. We know we go on a lot of tangents, but that's kind of our thing. So until next time, thank you for listening. My name is Dennis.
And I'm David. And remember, the Force will be with you.
Always. Jawa Jabber, a Star Wars podcast, is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. All names, sounds, and all Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of Disney and the respective trademark and copyright holders, unless otherwise indicated. Jawa Jabber, broadcasting exclusively on Utini Radio.
чтобы не ломил эту бабу, а Бокин.